Afternoon Show with Christian Arcan and Andy Hart starts now on WEEI.
From the Big Night Studios, right here next to the Card Vault at TD Garden. If you're a content creator looking for a place to record, you can do it right here. Book your time at bignightmedia.com. By the way, there's a watch party for the game upstairs in the Big Night Studio B. And I believe right now Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce are up there recording their podcast. But that's all secondary to what's going on in this room right now. And that is the great Tom Giles, NBC Sports Boston.
What's up?
Celtics pre and post joining us here before he goes into work. How you doing, Giles? How are you feeling? It's a big day, right?
Yeah. And it almost feels like playoff weather out there, right? Doesn't it? Like, this feels like Eastern Conference Finals type of weather we got going on. There's a nice little buzz going on outside the Garden right now, too. So it's exciting.
What do you think about my idea that this team, it's not title or bust, it's wins record or bust? Because I think the expectations are ridiculously high.
The wins record 73.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that they're more concerned with winning.
82 and over,
boss.
What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I was kind of disappointed when they dropped that last preseason game because, you know, they had the opportunity to win like 99 games there.
Yeah.
And they were kicking everyone's ass in the preseason, too. They were like running through these teams in the preseason like they were in the it was a complete continuation of what we saw last year, which I thought was interesting.
This is the 07 07 Patriots. I'm telling you, this feeling is. Super team.
To support your notion and your idea, Joe Mazzulla is like the perfect coach for them to go out there and try to win every single game, win every single quarter. Like, that's just the way he's wired. And then as you're watching those preseason games, it's like it doesn't really matter who's coming in off the bench. They're performing well. So kind of what intrigues me about this team, and obviously they've got the best starting five in the NBA, but is the fact that once you go to your second unit, like, those guys, Peyton Pritchard, the amount of growth he's had, like, they are going to continue to win games. So, you know what, Andy? I don't really hate it. I don't hate it.
So I just picked Peyton Pritchard to be
sixth man of the year.
Yeah? Yeah, I don't hate that either. Maybe
about Jaylen Brown for MVP?
That's another interesting one. I just think that here's why I think
parlay those.
Here's why I think it's so hard for either Tatum or Brown to win MVPs because their roster is so loaded.
Yeah.
Because their starting five is so loaded.
I agree with you. I think that's going to hurt them.
And the way they play is they share the basketball.
Right.
They play team defense. They share the basketball. And then, you know, everyone else that votes on it looks at it and says, well, of course, you know, Jason Tatum, look what he's surrounded by.
Right.
You know, look what Jaylen Brown's surrounded by. So, unfortunately, in this situation, when it comes to, you know, personal awards like that, I think it kind of hurts them, but it certainly helps them when they're trying to win a championship.
There's something to be said about a team extending their players, keeping everyone around, and then there's what the Celtics did, which is, I think, it's that on steroids. They brought back everybody. They gave Luke Kornet a one-year deal. I mean, everybody got re-signed. Whit Grosbeck just draining that bank account before he leaves. What do you sort of think about a team that, rather than that trying to upgrade in certain areas, just decides, hey, we're going to bring back everybody who won the first time and do it the exact same way? That can be a dangerous proposition sometimes, right?
It can be, but I would argue that you also have some very motivated individuals based on the offseason in Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum for, you know, whatever happened surrounding the Olympics, Tatum being there and being benched, Jaylen Brown not being invited at all. I think those two things work in your favor. I also think that this is, for the most part, a young team. Like, you've got ascending players. I mean, Al Horford, you hope that he can be what he was last year, but everyone else, don't you think they're going to get better? So, look at the bench players. You think that they're going to continue to get better? That's why it doesn't bother me at all that you're kind of bringing back most of last year's team.
A cynical guy like myself, a true New Englander like myself.
Yeah, that's you.
We were talking earlier that this is a weird feeling. I can't remember a team, a season that was so universally positive, adored. And I almost have that, you know, the Titanic was an unsinkable ship until it sank, right? And tragedy ensued. Are we whistling past any graveyards, or is this team legitimately as good and as unstoppable as it feels?
I think it's more the latter. I think that they are the best team in the NBA. I think they've got the the perfect coach for this team is in the guy.
You keep saying that, huh? You're really high on Mazzulla.
I do. Yeah, I mean, Joe Mazzulla.
You want the
like,
bullet right between the eyes, right?
Yeah, hey, whatever it takes. None of us are going to be invited to his funeral, Andy, so it doesn't matter.
I don't know anybody invites people to their funerals. Well, I thought you just kind of showed up because there was a thing in the paper.
Yeah, that's part of it. The Curb Your Enthusiasm, didn't they have one that was like a pre-funeral?
Yeah, they made plans. Yeah, Richard, he was you're not coming to my funeral.
Yeah, it can be done. But in any event, like, this team seems locked and loaded. They seem focused. It feels like he's going to have them playing motivated basketball from the jump. And, you know, maybe there's a lull somewhere in the regular season, but who else in the NBA do you look at and say, all right, they got that much better, and they're going to have to watch. Like, they're playing the Knicks tonight.
That's what I was just going to say. The Knicks, I think, had the most impactful offseason of anybody, you know, in terms of adding and trying to match with the Celtics. I think that they did the most. The Sixers, you could say, too, but their two main guys aren't playing tonight, so that's a little bit unfortunate for them. But, yeah, I'd say these Knicks, they went all out this offseason. Trades, extensions, free agents signed even. Like, they have a lot going on. I think that's a team that certainly built their roster in the spirit of trying to compete with the Celtics.
Yeah, and here's the other thing, too, to your comment, Andy, about us just feeling so positive about this team. When was the last time we only had, like, one, and the Bruins are good right now, but you see what, the Red Sox didn't even make the postseason, so you didn't get any of that carrying you into October. The Patriots right now are pretty much at their lowest that they've been in how many years?
30
decades?
Yeah.
Okay.
So
you have that going on, like, on one side, and then you got the Celtics, who kind of feel like the complete opposite. So I think that's probably factoring into it a little bit, too. Isn't it? I just feel like, you know, Boston sports fans in general right now need a night like tonight. Need the Celtics back in action. Need a team that's going to go out there, you know, raise the banner, get the rings, everything else, and then go out and you actually get to see this team out on the floor going up against who's supposed to be the greatest threat in the Eastern Conference in the New York Knicks.
You keep mentioning Mazzulla, and he might be the perfect coach for this team and the situation and these players. And you mentioned that it is a young team. That's a young team facing a new challenge, a different challenge of being, forget the heat way where he wants the bullet, back, head, whatever. Where is this team capable of being chased and challenged on a nightly basis? Is there the motivation? I don't really buy the Olympic thing all that much. We got into a good argument about that at one point in one of our past shows. But is this team where they are in their development? They're all paid, right? Pretty much everybody's making a boatload of money. They're all paid. Is there any just natural letdown, or are they truly trying to do something special? The back-to-backs, the dynasties, whatever you want to call it.
Well, I think the other factor, too, is that everyone questions whether or not they were, not everyone, but there were plenty of people on the national level that questioned their path to winning a championship last year. There were plenty of people that looked at it and said, all right, you beat Miami, they didn't have Jimmy Butler. You beat Cleveland, they didn't have Donovan Mitchell. Tyrese Halliburton got hurt in the Indiana series. Then
didn't have to go through Milwaukee or the Knicks or anything. Yeah,
you didn't have to face Denver. You know, maybe even Oklahoma City would have been a better team in the finals, a better matchup for you. So I think there's a lot of people that kind of question, and they question them all the way up until the end. So I think there still is some of that as well, where I believe the mindset of this team is more so they're on a quest to win a championship, not on a quest to win back-to-back championships, if you will. You know, they're not trying to defend their title. They're trying to go out and win this year's title.
Kristaps Porzingis is obviously still rehabbing. Al Horford, who you mentioned, is one of the not young guys on this team at 38 years old. Is this a team that can play around maybe if they have to? Because you're seeing it now with these older guys taking some load management time. If Horford can't go every night and you're leaning on Luke Kornet and Xavier Tillman and guys like that, do they have the talent in the other four to sort of play around that?
I think they do. I think there's going to be certain matchups, and some of those matchups you're going to get beat anyways. You know, if you're going up against Jokic, and Embiid's kind of been a problem for them anyways. Yeah. But Luke Kornet to me seemed like he fit in pretty well, albeit it's preseason basketball, and there's only so much you can take away from it, especially when you're playing the Sixers and they're not playing anybody. But those guys, Luke Kornet, Xavier Tillman, look good in this preseason. It's obviously going to be a different animal once you get into the regular season here, but I'm not really that kind of concerned with that. I think that you've got a really good starting core. You've always got, you know, basically two of your starters on the floor, if not three of them, three of your best scorers. So they're kind of set up for it.
I know you won't be allowed to talk about this when you get on your set.
Here we go.
What do you fear? What do you hate? What do you wonder about? What do, like, Where are the potholes and pitfalls?
Yeah, I mean, everyone obviously...
None, fine.
No, obviously everyone goes to injuries, and the fact that they played a lot of basketball, and they, you know, didn't have a long offseason, if an offseason at all, for some of these guys. So, you know, you do have to worry about kind of managing that maybe a little bit. But you obviously factor injuries into any team.
Like, right.
It's a conversation with any team. I guess maybe you could bring up complacency. We've seen them be complacent at times over the last couple of years. That's also pretty much every NBA team.
Right.
So that's kind of the couple things that you look at right there is do they kind of suffer from that at any point? But I think those would be the main two. Otherwise, you know, if they continue to play like 1 through 5 out on the floor, team basketball, they'll survive nights when they don't shoot well.
Are you getting a ring?
No.
No?
No.
Why,
sure? Why would I get a ring?
You're part of the pre- and post-game show. The Red Sox give rings to everybody.
Yeah. No, that's okay. I'm
not even like an employee ring?
No. No.
Have you seen them? Do you know what they look like?
Trinket?
I have not seen them. I don't know what they look like.
Because Wick's really pumping them up here. He says they're like the two-car garage.
You've basically heard something.
I mean, I've heard that, you know, it's possible that they might be the biggest championship rings that we've
Wait,
seen.
Wait, are they the multi-piece kind? Like, do you turn them and the top comes off and it's like the inside of the garden or any of that?
Because I think that's a bust of their face.
Yeah. It sounds like a micro machine that something else comes out.
No,
it'd be kind of cool, actually. I'm not really sure. No. And I'm definitely not getting a ring.
Okay.
I had nothing to do
you
with
carried their water for a decade.
What about like Scal and Carter? Are they getting rings?
I believe they are.
Well, then
I think
you
so.
Should get a ring if they're getting rings.
They're team broadcasters.
You're part of the
so
post game show.
No, it's different.
It's not different.
I'm quite comfortable with
you. All right.
A bonus.
Hashtag get Giles a ring is what I'm ready for. We're gonna get you a ring, Giles. Don't worry about that. Speaking of Wick, the sale of the team, is that something that could maybe be a cloud over the proceedings here? As we don't know what the future holds in terms of if they're going to keep the team together and pay all these luxury taxes and everything else. Is that something that could maybe creep up as the season goes on?
I don't think it really matters that much to the players. You know, they're, as you just mentioned, you know, they're on the contracts that they've been given.
Paid,
so,
right.
Yeah, I think they're pretty much fine with that. I think it is probably human on some level for maybe some guys to wonder, you know, what's it going to be like next year or the year after? And maybe that's why there's the heightened, and not to use the word pressure, because obviously Joe Mazzulla doesn't want to use the word pressure
right.
here, but maybe that's why there's an intense focus on them winning the championship this year, because they do realize, like, you can't keep this group together forever. So I think that's got more to do with it than, you know, any change in ownership, which, you know, who knows when that happens.
I'm sure you listened to the Stephen A. podcast with Jaylen Brown,
mm-hmm.
and when he was asked about his relationship with Jason Tatum, he said it's a championship relationship, and he barely got the words out, and he started chuckling to himself.
That's how you know it's funny.
Is it funny, or he knows that no one's going to buy this crap that I'm selling right now? That's why I'm chuckling. What do you make of that relationship, which... what they going to say now kind of thing, championship relationship. But as you said, you just brought up that idea. You might not be able to keep this team together forever, which means one of them might need to go, which means at some point maybe people are having those same discussions. Who are you keeping? Who are you getting rid of? Who's more expensive? What can you get more for? Do you ever think we'll totally put that discussion to bed, the Brown-Tatum stuff?
I think that some of it should have been put to bed last year with the fact that they won a championship together and with the fact that, you know, there were a couple moments through the postseason where, you know, was it Tatum who smacked Brown first, like on the chest after a huge three, and then Jaylen got him back like the next game?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
They think they had that. Like, their relationship on the floor is great. And, you know, the fact that they found a way to win, and that's, I think, what they needed to do to probably quiet some of the people that wanted to talk, you know, incessantly about their relationship. They went out there and they did it. They won a title, and I wouldn't expect them, you know, really anything to kind of change what they're going to do on the floor. Because, again, the other thing that, too, helps is that you've got Jrue Holiday. You've got Derek White. Like, because you have as many guys on the floor with you that can score at any point in time, they're going to continue to play team basketball.
Yeah. Yeah. Agree with that. All right.
Just really made me think they're the anti-Patriots in so many ways.
They really are.
Like, they have stars. They have fun. They make plays. They have leaders that will squash anything that becomes an issue. They literally are like the anti-Patriots on every level.
And it's everything we need right now, isn't it?
It is kind of.
What if Joe Mazzulla was coaching the Patriots?
There's a Andy's really thinking about
yeah,
that.
That'd be something, right? I think that would actually be. I think they'd benefit right now.
I honestly think they'd benefit right now. And they're boys. Mayo has talked about Missoula, right?
Like yeah,
they have a relationship going back. Maybe he needs to bring him in for a couple bullet between the eyes talks with some of his players. There you go. One more question for you.
What's that?
Actually, two-part question.
Uh-oh.
If you could buy only one jersey, not for yourself, but for one of your like nephews, nieces, somebody, you buying Tatum or Brown?
I'd probably can I buy one of each?
No, or is you can like buy one. I just said one. Pick one.
All right, I'll go hard. Tatum.
Sneakers, same question. The Tatum 3s or the, what are the 741s?
Oh, yeah. I forget what the brown shoes are, but this one should not be a contest.
Which shoe you like better?
I'd say if I'm going to wear them myself, I'd probably like the Tatums. I would lean
the Tatums are way better.
Typical yeah. Nike
the
guy.
The Tatums are way better.
Those falls 741s. In line with society's norms.
Yeah, those 741s look like the bootlegs from China or something. Like
that.
Like they look like when you try and buy Jordans or whatever, and they send you something, and it's
okay.
It's
instead
of the Jumpman, it's a guy like doing this or something.
That's the first version. We'll see what the next one looks like.
We'll see, but I do
remember
like
the,
those
remember the
Tatums.
First iPhone? Come on.
That's true. I do like those Tatums.
Yeah,
those new Tatums are really nice. All right, that's Tom Giles, who deserves a ring, by the way. Wick, if you're listening, thanks so much
or
for stopping
bonus.
By.
No, and, being on with you guys was enough.
That is. That's a bonus in a lot of ways. All right. You can see him on NBC Sports Boston pre- and post-game and all during the week. Tom Giles, thanks so much for stopping by.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right. We're going to take a quick break here. Brian Frazocco is going to tell you what's trending, and we'll be right back with more on the Celtics, your Celtics phone calls, and some Patriots thoughts as well.
We're right back to it. Afternoons with Arcand and Hart on WEEI. WEEI.
Some have been saying that when you talk about the talent of the team, it's a little bit of a shot at Bill Belichick. You can't take a shot like that and have it directed at Belichick. It's directed at the current coach.
Yeah.
If you're soft, it's a reflection of the current coach.
That's right.
Mayo's going to talk his way out of this job. You realize that. We both like him. We both respect him. He and I had somebody else with another team say this. He should not be saying the things he's saying. And it occurred to me yesterday, if he keeps talking like that, Robert Kraft's going to have no choice but to fire him.
It's my life.
Pro Football Talk podcast. Harsh words there for Jerod Mayo.
Is he wrong?
Going to talk himself right out of a job, and if he keeps it up, based on the things that he's saying, not the way the team's playing so much. I mean, that's part of it, obviously. But that wasn't the thrust of what he was talking about there. And I don't know who he was talking about. He said he's talking to people on other teams. I mean, take for that with a grain of salt if you want to. But I think that, in general, he's not wrong. But I do think that it's going to have less to do with what he's saying and more to do with the team. I mean, the things that he's saying aren't great, but he's hardly the first coach to ever call out his team before. Everybody's acting like this is the first time that's ever happened. Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, they're all like, oh, yeah, you can't do that. No one does that. It's never going to work. And it's like, a lot of coaches have done that before, and I don't know if there's a 0% hit rate on it. I think sometimes guys deserve to be called out. And I don't think it's the worst thing in the world when a coach does it. I think that this is really getting out of hand, all the hate that he's getting, just for making that one comment. It wasn't great. I don't think he should get commended for it or anything, but people are acting like he committed this awful crime. Like, all he did was call his team soft after they played a soft game. Tucker was right. They didn't play. They played soft. They should have been called soft after that game. Should he take maybe a little bit more personal responsibility? I personally think that he kind of does.
He says
it starts with me. I know it's me. I'm part of the problem too and all that, but he will also call out Jalen Polk. He'll also call out these other guys who aren't playing up to snuff and the run defense and everything else. And that's totally fair, I think. I don't think there's anything wrong with that personally. But it is really piling up on him right now to the point where if he loses that locker room, and I think that's more what he's in danger of. If he's calling them soft and they're saying, bleep you, I'm not going to play for you. You're going to call us names and you haven't done anything and you're not a good coach, or whatever it is they're thinking, which is flies in the face of everything that we heard in the beginning of the season and certainly the Kraft were saying about him, I think that could be a problem. And it seems like we're already kind of there. I mean, this is not a locker room that he seems to be much in control of. And that's going all the way back to training camp with Matthew Judon out there showing him up. Now, he traded him, but it's not like there was ever a time at any point where I thought, yeah, Jerod Mayo's really running this locker room in a great way, except for maybe that Cincinnati game. And that was very, very fleeting. After that, it was right back to, okay, it seems like they're just kind of doing whatever they want here. And that's been the case for about a month.
Anybody with eyeballs and any idea of what wins and loses in the NFL expected this team to be a bad football team,
yep.
Right? What they didn't expect is Gerard Mayo to be a train wreck of a head coach. And I think that goes for the Crafts, too. Like, the words we've heard, leader of men, culture builder, relationships, are any of those good right now?
No.
Forget the record. I don't care about the record. I predicted 0-17. I thought the team would stink. Most people thought the team was going to stink. They looked at the roster, and then especially with the attrition and losing guys, okay, you're going to stink. But I thought you'd be the adult in the room. I thought you'd be the guy that could control the stank, right? And lead and show me, oh, this guy's got it, so that when the team is better, when the talent is better, he's going to really lead them where I want them to go. The problem is, I do think he could talk himself out of the job.
Yeah.
Because he continues to, the worst thing I thought he did was have to backtrack. Like, indecision is terrible. I think in leaders, the worst thing you can be as a leader is indecisive. It's like one of those commercials where the guy's sweating, cutting the bomb wire, and it's like,
right,
the blue or the red. Aren't you an expert? Didn't you go to class for a long time? I think you're supposed to know which wire to cut. Gerard Mayo would cut one wire, everything blow up, and he's like, yeah, I meant to cut the other wire. Sorry, guys. And that's where I think he's in jeopardy, is because we knew football was going to be a struggle. We didn't think the culture would be a struggle. He was brought here to build a culture. And right now, everybody from the outside is looking at it and saying, that's one of the worst cultures I've ever seen. Because it's not any one thing. It's finger pointing. It's guys talking. It's social media. It's
all
police
it.
Stuff. It's all of it just piling on top of itself. And I do think the more he has missteps, the more, if you're the Crafts, you have to think, did I just judge this guy wrong? Did I misread his leadership abilities? Because the talent will change. You're going to get more talent. I mean, you're dubious. I'm not as dubious. But I think they're going to draft a good player in the first round. I think they're going to spend $100-something million. Can the guy coach? Or am I just going to be wasting my time then when I give more talent to a coach who's still in over his head?
Yeah, the Patriots right now have the second worst point differential in the league at minus 76. The only team's worse, Carolina. The Raiders are better, the Dolphins, the Browns, the Giants, all these teams. I mean, they're a bottom of the barrel team right now with no sort of end in sight, and amazingly somehow with a strong quarterback. Now, what about the idea here that the Gerard Mayo has inherited a team? And I know that it's not all about what you inherit, but Belichick, for example, in 2000 inherited a team with a lot of the Hall of Famers on it, with a lot of great players, certainly on the defense. And even on the off, they had Kevin Falk and, you know, Drew Bledsoe and Terry Glenn and Troy Brown. Like, there were good, there were players on that 2000 team, for sure. And they didn't all survive and make it for the dynasty, but a lot of them were key parts of the dynasty. Right now, this is a team and a roster that I think Pete Carroll was 8-8 with those guys, and then they went 5-10 or 5-11 in Belichick's first year. This was a team that was 4-13 last year with Belichick.
Yep.
And we're expecting the rookie head coach to be better. I mean, it's just that that seems like
he promised it.
He did, but I don't think that was realistic. I mean, like, you thought maybe if the Patriots went out and really added and really did stuff here, but they didn't. They brought back all of Bill's old guys, and that's one of the things that him and Lombardi and Patricia and all the rest of them, when they're sitting around there recording their podcast, always fall back to, is like, yeah, we had most of these guys. They re-signed a lot of these guys. They brought back all the old Bill Belichick guys, but Bill, I guess, was really the problem. And it's like, Bill was the problem. Bill was a big problem.
Absolutely.
There's no way to spin this where Bill wasn't a huge, huge problem at the end there. In these last 3 years since Mac Jones made the playoffs, Bill's decision making was just ridiculous. I mean, the things that happened were just ridiculous. And I feel like people are just brushing right past that because Mayo kind of sucks. And like, yeah, Mayo does kind of suck. I agree. So far, he kind of sucks. It's been 7 games. He may not get any better, but it's only been 7 games in the first year of a rebuild, and I think that the idea of him getting fired, or that, you know, this whole thing's going to be over in 1 year, people are really underestimating how steadfast Robert Kraft can be in his decisions, and he's already gone all in here. I just think there's been way too much put into it and put into the idea of Gerard Mayo being the head coach to just fire him. Now, does that mean they may come up with some other sort of solution? Maybe. Maybe they decide to bring in another head coach type figure and have him waiting in the wings, or they do something else with a defensive coordinator. I don't know. They bring in more assistants. Like, what? Missoula last year, he had 1 million assistants. Remember? Like, that's a thing that I could see happening. I could see them saying, all right, we can't move on from Mayo because I already went all in with this guy, but we can bring in some people to help him, and maybe those people make the decisions. Because what decisions is Mayo even making? You know, like, does the buck stop with him on anything?
Great question. the great question. And his indecisiveness in that area, I think, has been detrimental. I fixated when he said, I'd like to think as the head coach I decide who plays.
Right.
That was in August. This week, I thought post-game, the soft comment got a lot of the attention, as it should. He also said a number of times, I'm not sure. Which, appreciate your honesty. But again, in leadership, sometimes if you say, I'm not sure too often, people are like, he doesn't have the answers. He's our leader. He's the guy who's supposed to come up with the answers. Mm-hmm. He says it himself. Isn't he in the solution business? Well, a guy in the solution business keeps saying, I'm not sure. So you don't have any solutions.
No.
So you're in the solutions business, but you don't have any solutions. That seems problematic. And I thought he did it again on Monday in one of the interviews. I'd like to think I am. Somebody asked him if he was the guy to lead this team. I'd like to think I am. I don't like that. Don't say I'd like to think. Get rid of that. Say, I am.
Yes.
I have full faith in my ability
to
lead.
The answer to that question
right?
is yes.
You're right. Don't open the door towards doubt, especially now when doubt is everywhere. It's surrounding you. It's going to drown you and crush you and kill you and fire you. There's doubt everywhere you go. His leadership has just not been there. And that's where I would go back to what you said about the transition of power from Parcells to Carroll to Belichick. Talent is one thing, and I agree with you. The roster was loaded with team Hall of Famers, Pro Football Hall of Famers. It was also loaded, in my mind, with leaders, dogs. The Teddy Bruschis, the Willie McGinnis, the Lawyer Malloys, those guys were leaders. They were football guys. And I'm not saying they were perfect and didn't make mistakes. I don't know who those guys are on this team. I actually don't think there are any. Can you think of a single Bruschi, McGinnis, Brown-esque guy, just a pure football guy that is willing to do whatever for the team, is going to, like...
No, honestly, no, I can't. I mean, like, I think there's guys who will play hard and give it their all out on the field, but as leaders, as get like, behind me and we'll show you how to win, like that type of
right,
thing.
Follow
I just,
me
no,
to
I don't
freedom.
See it.
Right?
And there's guys who have won. Jawan Bentley was a Super Bowl ring. Like there's guys here on this roster. David Andrews, guys, maybe Andrews.
Well, but see,
but
that's
he's
the
problem.
Jones.
You know, like that's the problem. Yeah.
That who else?
Jonathan Jones.
Is it Jonathan Jones?
No,
but he doesn't have that kind
of
personality.
He doesn't want to do
Although
that.
Although he did just make a big speech at the end of that game.
You know what
so
that
we'll
breeds?
See.
That like that reeks of desperation. Mm. Even the guy who doesn't want to talk is like, Jesus, I guess I got to do it. If no one else is going to step up, I'll step
good
up.
Point. Right. Yeah.
But you mentioned Bentley. Absolutely, I think Bentley might trend that way in David Andrews. They're not part of this team right now. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's hard. Just like I think it's hard for Drake May to step in and just take the bull by the horns and be the guy. I've been here 2 weeks. I was looking at him yesterday. I'm not even sure he can grow a beard. And he's going to tell all these jerks what they need to do and stop doing. And I also think it's hard. Oh, I'm out for the year. I'm doing podcasts with Brian Hoyer on the internet, but I'm going to be the leader. I'm going to whip you guys into line. I think that's hard to do. It needs to be people that are in the fight right now. And of this roster that's in the fight right now, I have no idea, really, who those guys are.
Yeah, I'm with you there 100%.
And it can't be coaches either. I can't say, well,
no,
Slater's got to do it, and Hightower's got to do it. No,
Tyquan Underwood's got
to
do it.
No, like there has to be somebody in that 53-man locker room that is that guy. And if there's not, well, I mean, that's probably the answer to part of your problem right there.
That's a big part of it, I would say. One other thing I want to say in defense of Jerod Mayo here.
Defending him a lot today.
Alex Van Pelt. Well, I'm so negative all the time. I figured I'd at least bring this up.
You picked a weird hill to die on of positivity.
I don't think I'm dying because here's the reason why. Wasn't this season supposed to be all about Drake May and not really wins and losses and not really point differential and all that other stuff?
Theoretically.
Wasn't this supposed to be about developing Drake May? Doesn't Drake May look good?
Yes.
So then why do they get no credit for that?
Because
why does Alex Van Pelt and Jerod Mayo get no credit for the fact that their rookie quarterback with the entire season is supposed to be built around developing him? And I know it's only two games, but let's assume that he continues to improve. Why is that suddenly not important and the run defense is the most important thing in the world and things like that and the culture and all that? This wasn't supposed to be a team that was all about culture and run defense. It was supposed to be all about Drake May. And it seems like they're handling him pretty well.
Well, I think Alex Van Pelt is getting some credit for that. I do. I think people are starting to really differentiate play calling, offensive coordinator from, and Curran did it with us, right?
Yep.
Curran
mm-hmm.
did it with us. Differentiate the development of Drake May in part as sort of, I think in a weird way, kind of a shot at Alex Van Pelt because that's his area of expertise.
Right.
That's what you did forever. We all knew you could do that. It's the play calling and coordinating the offense, leading the offense we have doubts about, and we still have big doubts about that. I think he's getting some credit for that. I don't think Mayo's getting credit for anything right now. It is open season on Jerod Mayo from all angles. And I mean all angles. We glossed over it the other day. Devin McCourty,
yeah,
a captain of the Patriots, a contemporary
ripped
Patriot
him.
Great, ripped him. If you're soft, you look at the head coach. What is the head coach doing? Like, everyone is taking shots at even friendly fire, I would suggest. And now Bill Belichick.
And how do you think that lands in the locker room, too? You know, those guys in the locker room know that Devin McCourty, Tom Brady, and Bill Belichick are out there openly questioning and basically ripping this guy and the things that he's saying and the things that he said, not just about the game, but about you and your toughness and your character and all that. And they're questioning that. So whose side do you think they're going to be on?
Correct.
Jerod Mayo's or McCourty and Brady and Belichick? Of course they're going to be like, yeah, these guys are right. We're not soft, you know, even though they are. That's the thing. They are soft. They're playing soft this year.
And that's why I told you, this was the first week I really opened up to the idea that he may be a one-and-done head coach, and because it's all piling on. And once it's quicksand. Mm. Once you're going down in the quicksand, unless somebody throws you a lifeline, you might be dead. You might be in trouble. And I feel like he's in the quicksand. Now, the ultimate lifeline, we know the ultimate lifeline. Go beat the Jets, then beat the Titans, then beat the Bears. And now all of a sudden you're 4-6. And that's not great, but that is...
Or lose to them, but have Drake May ball out. That too.
Right,
I think people
would
be okay with that too. Yeah.
And stop with the crap. All this crap that is like periphery, like, get rid of that. Mm-hmm. That has to end. If that doesn't end, that may end his career coaching, because that will drag down even good coaches, and I'm not sure if he's a good or a bad coach. He's never had the chance to prove what he is.
Yeah.
He's 7 games into his coaching career when he was never a coordinator. He's 38 years old. Like, I still firmly believe there's a chance that he gets a second chance and is a pretty good head coach, because this one is really going down the road of it's not
going
to last.
Yeah, it's going pretty bad. 617-779-7937. Our good friend Steve is in Fall River. Go ahead, Steve.
All right, so these clowns on the podcast, does Bill Belichick understand that there's a reason nobody can play, because he created that issue? Not who has more blame for this roster, Jerod Mayo or Bill Belichick? Answer, Bill Belichick.
Well, I'd say him
Wolf
and Elliot Wolf, too, yeah.
This year, what could they do? Let's say they hit 5 draft picks, which is unusual. You're still stuck with this nonsense.
All right, your phone's breaking up, Steve. We're going to have to let you go, but thanks for the call. And listen,
could hit 2
I think
draft
that,
picks.
Yeah, you know, maybe you could have hit more than one. You certainly hit on the one guy, but then, that second round pick's not looking too great right now. And in general, I think that I would sort of lean towards Belichick leaving a roster and a general state of the franchise in a pretty bad spot. I mean, sure. But as you can see from Washington, as you can see from Houston last year, there are teams that can flip it in 1 year, in one offseason. It's not unheard of. It's not out of the question. Now, we'll see exactly where Washington finishes, but they're on pace right now to be a playoff team. They're on a competitive division, not in the NFC South. They're in the NFC East, and right now they're killing it. So I don't know. I mean, I think that there's no major expectation that a bunch of teams are all going to go from worst to first. But it seems like one team does every year. Or so,
absolutely,
you know? Like, and this could have been the Patriots. I don't think it was impossible for that to happen here if they had made some different moves and drafted some different people, but they didn't. So here we are. Anthony is in Houston. Go ahead, Anthony.
Is there any thought that maybe Mayo is choosing his words because he's really not in charge? I mean, he's the first year. You think they're going to give him that power?
Good question, Anthony, and I think that's a fair one. In terms of the power, we know that he's a handpicked head coach, right?
Sure.
We know that he was handpicked by the owner, and that there was a whole thing that went into that. I think that there is a little something to that, right? Like, we picked you, we've kind of groomed you to be the head coach. You may not have been getting other opportunities like this. There was a buyout in the contract. There was a whole investment in this guy. So I do think that there could be something to that, right?
But that's affecting his words?
Yeah.
Seems like an excuse. I think that could come up in other issues. Credibility with the team, for example.
Yeah, maybe he doesn't want to go out and say some certain things that he wants to say. Certainly during the
he called his team
thing.
Soft. What does he want to say?
He did, but sure. I mean, it's not like he's mostly been saying things and then walking them back as the season has gone.
Yeah.
I didn't even walk that one back. So why do you think he walked it back?
Because I think people are telling him to walk it back.
Right.
No, I do. We had this
Which
discussion
means that
yesterday.
He doesn't necessarily have control of
but
what he gets to say.
That's not necessarily control. That is a guy that's not very good at this.
Mm.
being guided by others. And who that person is, I mean, in most teams, at the very least, the PR director,
right,
the communications director, tells the coach, ah, these are talking points. Like, that's their area of expertise, supposedly.
Sure.
Is to how messages should be expressed, how they'll be received publicly, all these things. So I think that happens everywhere. It certainly happened to Bill Belichick in Cleveland, in the transition from Cleveland, and it happened at times here, how he could massage that.
Let me just go ahead and correct that. We're playing soft.
Yeah, playing soft.
And
we are also not soft.
Also are kind of soft. Bill is in Arlington before the break. Go ahead, Bill.
Here's what it is.
Hey, yeah, great show. Thanks for letting me on.
Thank you, Bill. You're welcome.
To me, all this discussion about Belichick and players, and that's all masking the true issue here. The true issue here is that ownership has run this team into the ground. First, they starved it financially by being the lowest spending team for at least 5 years. Then they made a ridiculous choice of a guy who had no qualifications to be a head coach and put him in charge thinking that, well, anyone could do the job. I think they would have learned their lesson after they let Brady go and think that anyone can do the job. And the truth is that this guy, he might be a nice guy, Gerard Mayo, but he's no way ready to be a professional head coach. And it's really sad, and it really falls back to ownership, which has proven itself to be pretty classless, I must say.
Yeah, I mean, Bill, you're not the only one who thinks that. I think that there's a
classless?
Lot of people. Belichick, diehards in particular, and even not Belichick diehards, but just people who think that he was getting a raw deal there in the Dynasty series and the book and all that other stuff, and now coming back out again, going on the morning show, going on the Breakfast Club, and talking about having to fire him after they agreed that it was a mutual parting of the way. You know, all that stuff. I think that that's part of the reason why I think Bill's so happy to be laughing in the Patriots' face right now is that interview.
Oh, sure.
You know, he had he didn't have to go on with the Breakfast Club in an interview talking about his new timeout on hate thing and say, yeah, oh, by the way, I fired Bill. Like, you have to bring that back up now in this random interview? Like, that's, I don't know. I could see that being an issue and something that he wants to punch back at. Bill Belichick, not usually through his own mouth, but through his surrogates.
His minions.
Minions and people out there in the media could get his message out. And his message was often pointed at people. I mean, there was a lot of that, whether it was the Crafts, whether it was Brady, whether it was whoever. I mean, you saw that over the years, for sure. So I'm not shocked by that. And I think that, you know, in general, Belichick, I'm not saying he didn't deserve to be let go, but they have really kind of piled on since then and haven't had much to show for it, you know?
No.
Like, they really haven't, so it hasn't looked great.
Well, this came to me the other day. So Robert Kraft clearly, with Bill, lost the divorce with Tom Brady.
Yes.
And now Robert Kraft is losing the divorce with Bill Belichick. Probably worse than he lost the first divorce, honestly.
Yeah, I mean,
because at least the first one, you got Mac Jones, you had a weird like playoff berth thing, so you had a little bit of hope. This
yeah,
has
but
just
Brady
been...
went off and won a Super Bowl.
No, I know, like, but that was at least you were competitive.
Yeah,
you turned it around 1 year, and the Cam Newton year. Remember the Cam Newton year? All the people talking about a path to the playoff when there really wasn't one, but people were still invested.
I was not one of those people, but yes, I
people
do remember
were
that,
saying
yes.
that,
mm-hmm.
And now it's just as he lost this. But you also have to understand, Bill has an axe to grind, and he is grinding the hell out of that axe. And Lombardi and Patricia and those guys are helping him. And you know who's actually really helping him quite a bit? Gerard Mayo.
Yeah.
Just by the way he's handling himself and doing, you know, his deed as the head coach. He's fallen on his face. There's no other way to put it. He has not done his job well since January.
No, he hasn't. All right, 617-779-7937, your number. We'll continue with your Patriots calls. And when we come back, Wick Grosbeck this morning, talking about how big those rings are, rings that our friend Tom Giles is not getting, which I do not think is fair. But we will get into the Celtics and their banner raising tonight and where this team and this group may stand in Celtics history, which, by the way, goes back a ways. We'll get into all of that next.
Boston Sports Original. We were there then.
It is Banner 17. The mission statement is mission accomplished.
How sweet it is.
And we're still here.
You guys, by the way, have been supportive all the way along for years and years, decades. You're the voice of the fan as far as I'm concerned.
Talk about the repeat here all season.
What are they going to say now? What are they going to say now?
This is WEEI. More of Afternoons with Arcand and Hart on WEEI.
I'm sure you're sworn to secrecy, but what can you tell us about the rings?
The rings are in the safe in the office, and basically nobody has seen them. they are massive. I will say that would be a word. And we'll go from there. There are probably four of us that worked on the ring.
and got a little bit of input stylistically from a couple of players. But really, the players didn't want to have any input. They want to be completely surprised tonight, and they are going to be completely surprised. They have not seen the ring.
Ceremony tonight. It's Christian Arkin. It's Andy Hart. It's WEEI Afternoons. We are live down here at North Station. Really, we are at Big Night Live in studio, in the ground level studio. Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce are upstairs, I believe, in Studio B recording their podcast right now.
So we're in Studio A?
I believe we are. I'm not sure which studio
this is.
Yeah,
we're the A-listers.
I mean, compared, honestly.
Yeah. Kevin Garnett, washed up old basketball players.
Paul Pierce, Andy Hart, Christian Arkin. I mean, you tell me. There's also a watch party tonight. You can get tickets on Ticketmaster. It's upstairs in Studio B. You got to be 21 or over to go up in there. We are next to the Card Vault at TD Garden. If you're a content creator looking for a place to record, you can do it right here. Book your time at bignightmedia.com. That was Whit Grosbeck this morning with Hillman, and they were talking about the size of the rings, which apparently are supposed to be just ginormous, even though Tom Giles isn't getting one. He should be getting one, by the way. I'm going to stand by that.
You also never know. Sometimes they surprise employees that could be. Afterwards.
That could certainly
like they
be.
They give them to players, executives, and then it's like, oh, you rest, you get one too.
For Celtics fans of a certain age, banner raising was something very common. It happened basically every year. If you were a fan back in the 60s during the Bill Russell, Bob Cousy era, in the 70s they had a 2 out of 3 1 year with Cowens and Havlicek. That was that wasn't a dynasty, I wouldn't say, but there were two championship seasons in that decade. In the 80s, of course, you had the Bird Celtics, and they won 3. The 90s we don't have to talk about, and then of course in the 2000s that was the last one, and that was the Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, Ray Allen, Rajon Rondo, and Kendrick Perkins championship 16 years ago. So some space between the last couple. It was 86 to 2008. That's a 22-year gap. And now from 2008 to 2024, a 16-year gap. And that got me thinking about Celtics history and where this team stands and where this group could stand in Celtics history. Now, it's going to be nearly impossible to ever come close to what the teams in the 60s did, because that was...
Right.
I mean, that was in all sports. I mean, there's Montreal Canadiens, the Yankees, and the Celtics. Like, that was it. Those were untouchable runs that I don't think anybody's gonna get to. But could this team be on par with, like, the 80s Celtics? I say yes. I think they can be. I think that they can win at that type of clip. I think that they can be something more than... And I know that the Celtics, it was sort of concurrent dynasties, them and the Lakers at the same time. But they were a dynasty. They won 3 in mm-hmm. 5 years. And they had Bird be the three-peat MVP. And had Hall of Famers all up and down the roster, including six-man Bill Walton. So that's a great roster. I think this roster's right up there with it. So, and if they keep it together, as long as they have all these guys signed for, they could absolutely hit those heights.
Yeah, I think they could make a dynastic run, Hall of Famer. I think they have two Hall of Famers right now. I think Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum are both going to be Hall of Famers.
Holiday might end up being a Hall
now,
of Famer, too.
That's what I was going to say.
Two
Can you sneak a third in there? Because I think that would be, you'd start to check off various categories.
Yep.
I also wonder.
And also, if they win multiple championships, that's going to help all of their Hall of Fame status.
Oh, absolutely.
Porzingis and White and everybody, they're all going to be.
Drives you in.
Al Horford could just be the Hall of Fame. I mean, listen, that's the way
it works.
Take the pike
and head west and just go to Canton. I mean,
basically,
Springfield.
Yeah. A lot of Celtics in there already.
The other thing that I wonder is, do you need, so you said it, the Celtics had the Lakers, mm-hmm. right? Well, multiple times, but like Bill Russell had Wilt.
Yep.
Like you have the foe that proves your dominance in a way.
Absolutely.
Do they need a foe? Like last year, everybody kind of, as Giles brought up, devalued the path.
Mm-hmm.
And it, to me, it's not devaluing it. It is what it is. It was what it was. It happened the way it happened. But do you need greatness? Do you need a resurgent Nuggets? Do you need a resurgent Bucks? Do you need something that really puts sort of the cherry on a run through the postseason? Or is
question.
It okay to just kind of, whatever, doesn't matter. You won 3 titles in 5 years. You're a dynasty. I don't care who you beat.
I'd say no, you don't, because who was the Jordan Bulls' main rival, you know?
Well, they had to get past the Pistons, right?
Yeah, to start off, they had to beat the Bad Boys Pistons.
It was probably the Jazz by the end of it, because they played them in back-to-back finals, right?
But do you consider the Jazz to
They're kind of the answer to the people that never win anything.
Right, it's true. I mean,
they never won anything because they had to play Jordan's Bulls. They went to back-to-back finals.
I don't care.
Don't tell me about the pain, just show me the baby,
and
my high school coach said.
They had to go through the Knicks a lot. They had to go through the Pacers. The Celtics in the 80s, they didn't start winning until the 90s, and they had to beat, the bad boy Pistons, as you mentioned. But I don't consider them to be the chief rivals. And then it just went on and on and on, and they never lost. Like, that was the main thing. They didn't lose until Jordan went to play baseball. So I'd say no one takes away from their greatness without them having a chief rival like right. The Celtics had to the Lakers. So I don't think that would hurt these Celtics either.
I also think if you want to, and as history is written down the road, can't you go back and say, and they won their first title going through Luka and Kyrie, which was considered at the time the best backcourt. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you're just writing one line about the opponent as you kind of go through down the history books, I think you can fluff that up. We may not believe it. It may be more than what we thought at the time. But history can show those two are Hall of Famers, correct?
Even yep. Shaq and Kobe's Lakers, like, who was their biggest rival?
Yeah, good point. I mean, they had to go through the Spurs, I guess. But, it was when they three-peated, it seemed like they were sort of on top of everything. And they beat kind of nothing teams, like the Nets, those old Kenyon Martin, Jason Kidd Nets, Sacramento.
It was like Allen Iverson 1 year, but he was pretty much alone.
Yeah,
he was
alone. By himself.
And that's why I don't consider that Laker run similar to the great ones.
Yeah.
That's kind of second tier to me.
I mean, they were a great team, and they were a great dynasty. But you're
sure.
Right.
It's not...
Warriors had the Heat and LeBron. So, I mean, there's recent ones. There were two teams going back and forth at each other. I think it would make for more drama and it'd be more entertaining if the Celtics had a peer
like
that they
OKC.
Could really go against. Sure,
they get good and they're good for the next 3 years, and you're going, you meet twice in the finals or something.
Problem is going to be the same thing that happened with OKC last time. Aside from Gilgeous Alexander, those guys are all going to say, "Get me the hell out of Oklahoma City."
Probably.
I don't want to live here forever. I don't care how good this team is. I don't care how many championships we can win. Send me anywhere else. I got to get out of Oklahoma City. Just my personal opinion. 617-779-7937 is your phone number. We'll take a quick break here. When we come back, we will reset on a tumultuous offseason for your reigning champion, Boston Celtics. We'll go through it all. And the biggest questions we have for the team going into the season, that's all coming up in the final hour live here from Big Night.